Whilst we're waiting for a few more people to join in, I'm going to play you a very quick video showing who we are
At the
and what we're
Learning Center,
about.
we focus on what actually works in real-world situations. Our mission is simple: eradicate the boredom of learning. Not with gimmicks, with systems that connect learning to performance. We listen first. We tailor properly. We integrate the tools that matter. And we innovate where it counts. As a Tatara Platinum partner, we design and support scalable learning ecosystems used by millions of learners worldwide. We migrate legacy platforms and build skills-led ecosystems designed to drive measurable impact. Your host today is Nick White, a global learning leader with years of experience. Joining him is Brian Belmont, who has scaled platforms to over 1 million learners and operated at board levels. We'll explore why L&D so often loses funding, what executives actually measure, and how to position learning as a driver of business impact. Let's make learning impossible to ignore.
Well, I'm looking at a list of attendees we have now, and I hope you can all hear me. Brian, can you hear me?
I can, Nick.
Fantastic. Well, we've got a list of people from around the world. So I was going to say greetings, but actually, it looks like it's going to be hola. There's two guten tags, and someone's up very late, a konnichiwa. And so, welcome to our very first webinar and podcast, Dev Learn. Repeat, these are intended to be a series of short webinars and podcasts aimed at L&D leaders who recognize that L&D isn't just about course completions. It's about revenue, cost control, and risk reduction. And joining me today, I'm delighted to have, I would say, a wise old sage, but they're old would be you being younger than me, a sage of this industry, Brian Bowman. Brian, welcome.
Great to be here, Nick.
Good to have you here. How are things in Sacramento?
Oh, the rains have finally stopped. We had a bit of rain. The sun's coming back out again, so all is well here. How are things in jolly old England?
If I said it was raining, you would not be
Okay.
surprised. So there we go. It's a normal day for us. But greetings to everybody from around the world. It's good to be here. Brian, before we go into today's session, I'd very much like to give everybody a bit of a glimpse behind who you are and what you bring to the occasion today and what you're adding to what's happening. Brian, now you probably see in front of you a screen showing a bit about you. Talk us through your history.
So currently I'm chief problem solver for solutions-based consulting, but I spent a good chunk of my career as either a CTO or VP of engineering. So my background is on the technical side, came up in computer engineering, software development, but fundamentally what engineering is all about is problem solving. And through my career, it moved from solving engineering problems to solving more business problems. For the past 10 years, I've been working at TRC Healthcare, now acquired by Calibri Healthcare, in the area of healthcare ed education, medication education, where basically I joined the team. We had several hundred thousand learners. We scaled that business to reach out over a million learners by the time I left. We have
Wow.
nine different platforms, consolidating them with a roadmap to consolidate those down into a shared platform across all of them. I've operated in the C-suite, worked with boards of directors, but also work hands-on with people who are building these systems, trying to justify these projects, worked with customers on building out ROI models for them to acquire our learning products and see what makes sense there. So I'm in somewhat of a unique position, having worked directly on building some of these things, justifying these projects, worked with customers doing it, but also been the person evaluating a number of these projects and proposals and presentations for merit to decide whether we move forward or not.
If I may say, you're a bit of an unusual beast because we have heads of L&D, we have heads of IT, and they often don't get on, but you're one and the same. You are the one individual who does both.
Yeah, I spend most of my career trying to translate between worlds.
Okay. Well, today we've got a bit of translation for you to do, and it's moving on to our topic for today. And I will say, for any of you who've got questions, send them through in the Q&A box, and we're going to answer them at the very end when we come to the end of this session. We won't answer them throughout. We'll go through them at the very end. So anyway, it's a very timely session we have today. For many amongst you have probably been going through budgets. You may have just gone through them, or you're about to go through them. Now, I do hope for those that have been through them, Santa Claus has been very kind, and you've got a bag full of money to spend on developing learning within your organization or outside your organization. However, I suspect that's not the same for most of you. A lot of you are probably looking at a reduction, you're looking at hard times. It's a tough world. We hope today to shed some light on how you can get more money from your CEO using Brian's experience, but in so doing, prove the value of learning. And we're going to cover five sort of key topics in doing that. One is actually the old debate of what does the L&D department want? What does the C-suite want? Looking then at objectives, what the company's objectives are, how you can prove a credible ROI, the multipliers you can put in. That's a very important role, actually. How you get buy-in from other members of management and other members, team members. Finally, hallelujah, we may show you the holy grail of what can be achieved. Brian, is that a bit of a fair assumption of what we're going to go through today?
It's a lot of stuff in a brief amount of time. So we're only going to touch the surface of it. But if you have follow-up questions, we'll provide a link and resources. You can email me or contact Nick, and we can follow up with more detail.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. We're going to be running a survey after this webinar, where if you want to dig in more detail into one of them, we certainly can do so. So let's kick off with the very first part, L&D versus a C-suite. Brian, over to you.
Yeah, so actually, this is the time of year a lot of you are out there trying to put together your objectives and your metrics for the coming year. 2026 is off to a start. Ideally, everyone has their business objectives, their departmental objectives, January 1, and you're all set to go. Reality is, no, that typically doesn't happen until February, March, sometimes even April. But the thing is, a lot of L&D departments get caught up in the things that they can most easily measure, which are completions, number of hours spent in training, satisfaction surveys, how engaged the learners are, and even in some cases, things like cost per learner. But in the end, all of those things are sort of, they don't translate very well into the things that the C-suite and the business objectives that the C-suite's looking for. Ultimately, if you look at what your executives in any business want, from a financial standpoint, they're looking at things like revenue. They're looking at cost, the cost of that revenue, risk, quality, and then cost per skills acquired. So what we're going to talk about today is a little bit of how do you go from having these basic metrics that you can get out of your LMS and through surveys with your learners, how you connect that back up to what the business is really after, which is moving that business forward, moving their strategy forward, driving their financial objectives, or in some cases, in healthcare, for example, improved outcomes in that, as from a healthcare standpoint.
So you're saying that actually within a normal business, the activity side, it's important, but actually your boss's boss is really interested in showing the money.
Why should we spend that money? So basically, the C-suite's going to look at it as an expense. We have all this investment we need to make to L&D, but there isn't a clear path to, well, what is the return on that investment? Right? It's left as an exercise to the reader. And what you really need to do is look at ways that you can more directly spell that out and translate the work, all the great work and activity that you're doing, into what are the objectives that we're going to achieve, and how do those objectives link back to the corporate objectives, the business objectives.
Okay, so let's have a look then at sort of the objectives, and I know we talked a bit about this beforehand. Guide me through what are the things that they should be looking at.
Yeah, so really what you want to do is you want to start a little bit top down. Make sure you actually even understand your organizational objectives. Nick, I don't know if you remember last November when we were at the Learning Leadership Conference, there were a number of people who quite simply didn't know what their business objectives were. They're caught in their own little world of their department. And where do they start? How do they go find these things out? Well, in many enterprises, they'll roll those out usually at the start of the year. This is what we're trying to achieve for this year. But not every enterprise rolls those out as effectively. If you have a public company, then you can go look at what they are telling their investors. If you're a private company, then you need to ask. If no one's actually told you what the business objectives are for the coming year, and what the business is focused on, well, shame on them, but it's okay. Go ask your boss or their boss, to find out what are the key things ultimately that your organization is after. Most of the time, unless you are specifically in an organization that's selling learning and development or education directly, most of the time L&D is playing a supporting role. So when you look at those objectives of grow in this market or that market, achieve this much in EBITDA from a financial perspective, the things of those nature. The next layer down is you look at what are the operational drivers. So if you're selling widgets, we want to increase our sale of widgets. We want to increase the quality of widgets, reduce the amount of returns and things of that nature. At the operational level, there'll be different departments responsible for achieving the objectives, or driving the efforts that result in the achieving the goals that the organization is after. So if you're selling widgets, there's a sales team. Sales team needs to be, and sales teams turn over fairly often. They bring on new sales reps. If they can bring on sales reps faster, get them onboarded, trained, and selling quicker, that actually will help increase revenue for the company. If you're building widgets and you need to bring on new employees. So I'm mentioning these things. I'm jumping ahead a little bit to capability gaps. You look at each of those operational drivers will have certain areas where they need to execute in order to meet the year's objectives, the corporate objectives. But oftentimes there's a capability gap between what that organization needs to achieve and what their people can do and what their actual status is. Typically, there's new hiring and onboarding is a great place where learning interventions, which are down there at the bottom, can actually help augment and improve operational capabilities that drive operational drivers that lead to organizational objectives.
Is it fair to say that in the vast majority of L&D departments, they actually do it the other way up? They start looking at learning first.
That's their focus. And most departments are like that. It's not L&D isn't alone. A lot of departments look at here is what we are trying to achieve, right? These are our goals, but they haven't necessarily connected those goals with the corporate goals, the financial goals, because they're missing the layers in between. They haven't seen what the operational drivers are. They're not even sure who is providing those key things that are driving those operational goals. They sit in their little world. It's sometimes not little, it can be a big world where they know they need to train these people, but they haven't linked that training back to, well, so what is that training going to do? How is that better going to enable this department or that department to achieve their goals? From a risk management standpoint or in a compliance standpoint, what are the risks and the impacts if people don't get this training? Don't go through the compliance requirements. And what can we do as a learning organization to make sure they do that, they complete their required education and training to reduce the overall risk to the corporation?
So, for example, in your background, I mean, we saw earlier, you went from what 400,000 to 1 million learn, and that's significant.
That's
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Did you go through this journey yourself? Did you have to learn, or were you always clear this was what you wanted to do?
Well, so, I'm not sure. Are you asking about me personally, how to go
Always
about
about
doing this?
you.
But personally, I started as an engineer basically just working on code for something. I knew what we were building directly and had objectives for that and for code quality, et cetera, but really didn't know how to link that to the larger problems. But over time, as I, became responsible for a department and started learning about budgets and things of that nature and how to justify those budgets and how to keep and grow and maintain them. I learned how to educate the people above, managing up, educating upwards in terms of what you're doing, but also learn, ultimately in all of this, it's what's in it for me. Basically, your corporate C-suite have objectives. They have shareholders and board members that they're trying to satisfy. They need to achieve these things. Their direct reports, those next layer in operational drivers, need to execute on certain things in order, to meet their objectives. And it's really just talking to people about what their needs are and then figuring out how what we're doing can fit in and link to each of those things. From personal experience, when you talked about TRC and growing things, as we looked at different initiatives within the company for growth, we had objectives of growth. We had, when I came on board, we had a platform that had kind of reached its limit for growth and was kind of very creaky. So we had to look at the costs and the expenses of replacing that platform and justify those based upon, well, what can we do with it? So what's the point? Yes, we have an old platform. We replace it with a new platform. It's going to cost us a bunch of money, but how is that money going to, how is that
I
effort going
got
to
you.
pay us off in the end?
I got you. Okay, so sort of moving on, once your objectives are set, then the ROI you're going to set, to talk us through the metrics you're looking at.
So what we talk about here is building a credible ROI, because what you're going from is learning metrics down at the bottom. And what you want to get to is risk reduction, cost reduction, revenue increase. Well, it's really hard to directly tie all of these things. You go through that step of looking at how there's a missing capability, a capability gap that learning can address. But what you want to do is come up with numbers that really come across as credible. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're not measuring precisely Nick learned X and that made us, this much money, 12 pounds sterling in 2026.
Whoa, that's two pints, by the way. That's two beers.
Instead, what you're looking at is understanding those metrics, those KPIs and drivers, the learning gaps there. And then you take a percentage of them. Basically, if I can get my sales team onboarded 25% quicker,
Okay.
a new member, and they can start earning revenue and they can start bringing in their first time to sale that much sooner, you take that, you look at the 25% sooner, and you take a percentage of that that is going to be due to your onboarding and training program that you've worked in cooperation with the sales team and the sales leaders on.
Okay. Yeah. I really get that. I mean, don't want to sound too kinky, but that just turned me on. It's quite exciting the fact you can actually measure that and get something into the market much faster. That's great.
So, for example, in 2017, we had a complete changeover on our sales team. A new sales leader came in, major organizational shift from inside sales to more outside sales. And our VP of sales, our CRO at the time, basically needed to onboard a new team of people who understood enterprise information, education, sales, but didn't understand our products. So we had to put together training and onboarding, a learning suite of education. The performance of that suite of education and training directly impacted time to revenue, the ramp to full sales capacity. That's a great example of being able to take a project, look at the amount of effort that has to go into that training for those people, but put a direct dollar amount from a revenue standpoint on that that effort.
Okay, I get you. Okay, let's move on to the next part of this, and it really is looking at performance multipliers. Now,
So
what is a performance multiplier for the uninitiated? What do you mean?
It's pretty much what it says. It's just increasing the performance capacity by a multiple. But Most folks in L&D know this, that if you just go through training and learning, education, but you don't directly have it applied and it doesn't get supported and reinforced once that training is done, you're not necessarily going to be able to impact the behavioral change you need to. One of the benefits of partnering with the operational teams, understanding capability gaps and getting tied in with those teams on them, is to make sure that the managers are going to reinforce the same points that are going on in the training. So you can go sit through a course, answer all the questions, succeed on that. But if you don't apply that later on, and if no one cares about the things that you learned in it, it's going to fade and you're not necessarily going to get the results you want. But when that training is linked to something that is going on an ongoing basis, that's supported by your manager and your peers, you're going to get the sustained performance that learning drives.
Does that mean then that you've got to spend time with, I'm guessing, individual department heads, etc., to get them to buy into this? If they don't buy into it, they don't want to do it.
Yeah, and that's key to all of it. That actually helps with your buy-in
Right.
ultimately on the funding, though, is if you have an operational leader who says, I need this in order to meet my objectives, that helps again create more pull for that budget for you to get your initiative completed.
Okay. And the net impact of this obviously is going to be something we hope is pretty significant.
Yeah, and so this chart here is just a representational thing. But within the first 30 days of any training program, most of your learning signals, these are your how well did they do on this quiz or that quiz? Can they answer the questions? Did they read the material? Did they absorb or listen, understand the material? Those indicators that we typically get in L&D have the most impact earlier on as they're learning this. But really, what you need over a 90-day period for any type of behavioral change is really understanding the performance signals. Are they actually taking what they learned and putting it into practice? Are they following these things?
Right.
And that's really those performance signals are from the manager. Did they learn what they needed to do in order to do their job effectively?
Okay. Just making sure they follow up with it and that they continue that learning
And
hands-on.
those performance signals typically tied directly into then, are you achieving the goals that you intended to that drive that ROI?
So, for example, in your previous embodiment, your previous organizations, did you find that there were great managers who did this, who nurtured people and moved them on, others who were just, eh?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. To the extent that any sort of the training and learning directly mapped to things they're doing. For example, when we rolled out Pharmacy Technicians University in places like Walmart or Rite Aid, where they're training technicians or training people to become pharmacy technicians who are working in the pharmacy, the material that they were learning basically was directly related to the work that they would be doing in an atmosphere where they're surrounded by people knowledgeable in that area. Not only did it help the learning material and help them get better scores on tests, as particularly like the national certification exams, our students consistently scored higher than the national average pass rates, but also led directly into satisfaction from the manager side, from the pharmacy manager saying, okay, these pharmacy techs are now, when they go through this program, are much more job ready. Job readiness is a very important thing in training for a variety of different departments, but particularly in pharmacy. It just reduced error rates.
So it's a positive impact all around.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, so where is this all leading us? And I suppose it goes back to this slide you
Yeah, it
mentioned
does. I mean,
earlier.
really, when you're trying to do this, and as we said, you're covering this stuff in brief, but it's start with your organizational objectives as high as you can go. Ideally, what are the business objectives? What is your business trying to accomplish over the next 12 to 24 months? And then from there, the harder part is understanding what are the key things that they're looking at to get done from an operational standpoint to achieve those objectives. work and partner with those departments to identify capability gaps, and how you, as a learning leader, can work with those departments to help them fill those gaps with learning interventions.
So it's literally turning everything on its head.
It's top down, yep.
Top down.
As well as bottom up, because you're still going to be looking at those, how do you improve your completions and your satisfaction rate? So you need to do it's and.
Yeah.
Yes, and.
I suppose that does this all bring us on to what may be considered the sort of the holy grail of what everybody wants to achieve.
Yes, and I think you're going to, so technology, this brings us a little bit to technology. How can technology help?
Yeah.
Once you understand all of those things, I believe you and your team have been looking at some things and working on some concepts.
Oh yeah, where have I gone? He's disappeared. One second, go back one page. Yeah, we looked at different ideas of what can be achieved within a dashboard to actually show real metrics that bring it home to people, which, can you actually measure return on investment? Can you measure time to training? And the answer is actually, yeah, sometimes with difficulty, but it can be achieved. Even down to time for training individuals, this can be done. And is this the sort of thing that the dashboard you wish you had when you were?
Yeah, it's a little bit small to read, but
I
absolutely.
will make that bigger next time.
And most of those are based upon, if you understand some of those assumptions, you build the ROI out. But yes, to be able to put together a dashboard to be able to show, as particularly as you progress, how if we change this thing, if we have this learning intervention here, we can increase results by this much of a factor. And it means this much in terms of quality improvement, reduced returns, expense reduction, revenue generation.
All across the board. Okay, well, that is something that we are currently working on with several companies and actually trying to prove this for them. And it's what the industry deserves, to be quite blunt.
That's exciting, because there's a lot of executive, a lot of CFOs would love to see something like that. Of course, they're going to want to know all the calculus behind it as well.
Yeah, okay then. Well, listen, it's now time for a bit of Q&A with a very attractive ear and mouth, I think, in front of you. I've got a questions from different people. Well, Brian, take this the right way. Somebody here saying, "What's Brian's secret sauce? Can he join us?" By the way, those of you who are interested in getting in contact, there's a resources button at the bottom of the page where you can click on links, and I think Brian or my LinkedIn addresses will be there, our details. You can get a hold of either of us for the future. So hopefully that's one thing, Brian.
And I think you're sent a follow-up after this webinar,
We will
right?
send a follow-up after this along with a
We can
survey.
make sure that there's a link in communicate for communications.
Yeah. Bit of a general question here. What are the most common mistakes L&D teams make when trying to secure funding?
I think by just focusing entirely on the costs,
Yeah.
that's and leaving the benefits vague.
Yeah.
So there's two things. One, it could either be vague benefits with all cost, or by coming up with cost with benefit numbers that are just not credible. For example, if I say, through this training program, I believe we can onboard salespeople 25% faster, and it means this increase in revenue. It's typically Things aren't done in isolation. Learning interventions typically aren't done without other changes going on. Perhaps they're changing their sales system, their CRM, Salesforce, other processes. If you claim all of the benefits from a given accomplishment like that, 100% of it, typically it's not credible, because there are other initiatives, there are other things going on that are going to drive those revenue increases. If the numbers look too big, if they don't pass the sniff test, without the supporting sort of calculations to make your case, that is another one. That's if someone is actually looking at those things, claiming too much credit. is a problem. But most of the time, it's n not even really being able to truly articulate the value of this initiative and what it means and how it's going to benefit the company directly, in a
Okay.
direct monetary or risk, risk or expense reduction fashion.
Okay. The next question is, and I think you probably answered it a little bit earlier. What if my C-suite, what if the board won't talk to me?
Yeah, you don't have to go talk to the C-suite. They should be rolling things down. And if they're not rolling those things down, as I said, public companies, you can go look at their external publications and what they're saying to investors. Private companies, I mean, public or private companies, you should be able to go to your manager and ask them. And if they don't know, they should go to their manager, depending upon how large your organization is. Everyone should understand what it is that your business is trying to achieve. If you're in a company that doesn't want to tell you that, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a there's a very brave person, and I won't mention her name. My direct line manager, I'm trying to rephrase this in a nice way, will not listen to anybody and insists that we stick with the same metrics as before. What do I do? I know what
Well,
I do.
you do need to communicate with your direct line manager and support them, but you can still look at alternate ways of measuring, and you could still look at, how can this impact more broadly? Hopefully, providing additional information, additional data beyond what they're specifically looking for can help you voice the value.
Okay, I get it. Final one just come in. I have a solution that doesn't integrate with any other system in our company. How can I produce any metrics of worth? Whoa.
Well, I do know that any sort of system that you have, you're going to be able to get, if you can get some basic data out, like completions, hours spent, some of that basic stuff, then I certainly, our friends here at Learning Syndicate are very skilled at being able to take some of that data and figuring out how to get that into any other systems or how to actually get it into a format that might be usable for you to tie this back up to some higher level metrics.
It's all about integrations. Little one here, and actually some people are posting on the chat as well. Who's your best ally? Which department is your best ally for L&D teams to convince the C-suite to invest?
It will actually really depend upon the business. And in a lot of cases, one of the easiest, obvious ones from a revenue standpoint is sales. Sales is usually hungry for training or education in some ways, particularly onboarding training. But it can also be even in sales techniques. They're certainly one there. Basically, anyone who's responsible for compliance. The compliance department is a risk-based endeavor, and working with them, they're a natural ally for learning and development because a lot
Okay.
of clients requires training. And then there is, if you're in a business that is in the practice of building things, it's on the quality side, making sure that the training and education that gets rolled out to improve quality metrics. That
Okay.
one's a little tougher. It depends upon what's there, and it also depends a lot on the content, right? Because the if L&D can produce that content, or whether that content is so subject matter specific that you need different sources of the content for that training and intervention.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we've actually gone 5 minutes beyond our time. So we almost promised it's going to be a short, sharp webinar, a short, sharp thing we're going to do. And Brian, I want to thank you for your time today.
As always, it's a pleasure chatting with you, Nick.
Pleasure's all mine. And it just leads me to announce what our next event would be. And for those of you who maybe haven't figured it out, Brian and I are both big music fans, and The Clash in their seminal single of 1982 sang "Should I Stay or Should I Go?" What do you do when your LMS is failing? That's on Wednesday, March the 4th at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Those you want to attend, we'll be sending out the invitation soon. Keep your eyes peeled. Been wonderful being with you. Brian, thank you very much for your time. And it's time to say goodbye to everybody. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.